The movie October Sky, based on the book Rocket Boys, is about four West Virginia boys from a coal mining town who develop a rocket. One of the boys, Homer Wickham, whose hero is scientist and rocket developer for NASA, Wernher von Braun, is sent by his high school to Indianapolis to the National Science Fair. Homer wins first place at the competition. As people gather around him after the ceremony, admiring his trophy and congratulating him, an older man speaks to him. "Well done, son. Great work," he says. Homer thinks nothing of it. He's caught up in the moment. And then a flurry of reporters descends on Homer. And they ask, "What did he say? What did he say?" "What did who say?" asked Homer. "Von Braun, Wernher von Braun," they replied. "He just shook your hand." And in that moment, Homer realizes that his hero in science, Wernher von Braun, had just shook his hand and spoken to him, and he didn't realize it. I wonder how often I've passed by someone famous without realizing it. The people in Jesus' day missed him. The people in Jesus' day missed him. He came among them, and they ignored him. They were in the presence of God, and they didn't even recognize him. They probably weren't looking for him, since he appeared among them as a carpenter's son. Maybe they were just too busy with the routine of their lives. Or maybe, like many of us, they didn't want to see Jesus because he would impact their lifestyle. He would make them change. Turn with me, if you will, to John chapter 1, and we'll look at verses 6 through 8. Speaking of John the Baptist, the apostle says, "There was a man sent from God whose name was John. This man came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light." In John's introduction of Jesus, he wanted his readers to see and experience Jesus firsthand. So today, we'll take a look at verses 9 through 11 of John chapter 1, where John reveals some good news and some bad news about Jesus becoming human. The good news, Jesus is coming. Verse 9 says, "That was the true light which gives light to every man coming into the world." John stated that Jesus is the true light. That true light that the darkness can't overcome was coming in flesh, and blood. The true light that would point all mankind to the life that God offers was appearing in person. The true light that would dispel the darkness of sin and death was visiting this planet. They didn't have marquees. They didn't have billboards. They didn't have direct mail. They didn't have banners trailing behind planes to announce the arrival of Jesus. They didn't have those things in that day. But the people did have plenty of warning that Jesus was coming. God had told them over and over again, many times, in many ways. The great men of the Bible, prophets and others, had foretold his coming. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Daniel, Micah, Zechariah, Malachi, all said, "He's coming." Every book, every chapter, every page of the Old Testament testifies to this truth. He's coming. The primary theme of the Old Testament is that God would one day send the Messiah to earth to deliver his people Israel. That's the primary theme of the whole Old Testament. That's why it was written. Even some pagan astrologers in Persia figured it out when they saw his star in the east. They figured out that Jesus was coming. The good news is that Jesus is coming. Well, there's some bad news too. The bad news, Jesus wasn't wanted. Verses 10 and 11 tell us, "He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own did not receive him." As good as that news was, there was some bad news as well. As good as that news was, that he's coming, it was bad news. In the message, Eugene Peterson paraphrased these verses, verses 10 and 11. "He was in the world was there through him, and yet the world didn't even notice. He came to his own people, but they didn't want him." There are two responses that people make when Jesus is presented that John reveals in these verses. First of all, Jesus was ignored. In verse 10, the Greek word for world is cosmos. It means the realm where human beings live. John used the word world three times in that one verse. The first two times, as well as back in verse 9, the emphasis is on the planet, the place where the people reside. The third time that he uses it, the focus is on the people that inhabit the planet. Very much like in John 3:16, where he said, "For God so loved the world," he was referring to the people, not, it wasn't that he loved the planet. And from this verse, verse 10, we can learn three realities. First of all, we learn about the supreme fact of history. He, speaking of Jesus Christ, was in the world. Everything starts with this fact. When John wrote, "He was in the world," he means more than just a quick visit. God didn't just kind of stop by on his way to someplace else. God walked on this planet for 33 years. He was a flesh and blood man, born of a woman with a human nature just like ours. He was born as we are born, and he grew up through all of the stages of childhood. Infancy, a toddler. Jesus was a toddler. A child. Jesus was a teenager. Not like the teenagers that we experience, but Jesus was a teenager. Take a teenager. I always remember what Will Rogers said. He said, when a child turns 13, you stick them in a barrel, you put a cover on it, and you drill a hole so they can breathe. And when they turn 18, you plug up the hole. Teenagers get a real bad rap, don't they? Jesus was a teenager. Jesus was an infant. Jesus was a toddler. Jesus was a child. He could relate to every stage of life. And he was an adult. And he was a young adult. He was one of us. And he walked among us. The supreme fact of history. But also the supreme truth of history. The world was made through him. John repeated what he had already said in verse 3. Reminding his readers that Jesus is the creator. Jesus made it all. The supreme fact of history, the supreme truth of history, and, sadly, the supreme tragedy of history. The world did not know him. This is more than intellectual knowledge. This is more than knowing fact. It means failing to know intimately, like a brother would know a brother. The planet and all of its inhabitants missed an opportunity when Jesus visited planet Earth. Basically, the world snubbed their nose at Jesus. The supreme tragedy of history. J.B. Phillips imagines a conversation between a senior angel and a junior angel in his story, The Visited Planet. In the story, the senior angel tries to explain why the Earth is such an important place in the universe. And the junior angel is bored and comments that the Earth seems rather small and dirty to him. What's special about that one? That, replied his senior, is the visited planet. Visited? You don't mean visited by... Indeed, I do. That ball has been visited by our young Prince of Glory. But how? Queried the younger one. Do you mean that our great and glorious Prince, with all these wonders and splendors of his creation, went down in person to this fifth-rate little planet? Why should he do such a thing like that? It isn't for us, said the senior angel a little stiffly, to question his wise. Except that he is not impressed by size and numbers, as you seem to be. As to why he became one of them, how else do you suppose he could visit them? The little angel's face wrinkled in disgust. Do you mean to tell me, he said, that he stooped so low as to become one of those creeping, crawling creatures on that floating ball? I do, and I don't think that he would like you to call them creepy, crawling creatures in that tone of voice. For, strange as it may seem to us, he loves them. He went down to visit them to lift them up to become like him. And the story goes on to talk about how the people of the visited planet responded to the Prince of Glory. They failed to recognize him for who he was. Or at least, only a handful knew him. For the most part, they preferred their darkness to his light. And in the end, they killed him. When the junior angel hears this, he blurts out, "The fools, the crazy fools, they don't deserve." He was cut off by the senior angel, who says no one can explain why they were so wicked or why they killed the Prince of Glory. The world didn't recognize Jesus, and you know what? It still doesn't. Jesus was rejected. In verse 11, John tells us that the world's ignorance was not the worst of it. Not only was Jesus ignored, Jesus was rejected by his own people. He came to his own land, Palestine, and to his own people, the Jews, and they didn't receive him. He ought to have been welcomed with open arms, He should have been welcomed like a soldier coming home from war, or a king coming to his own kingdom. But he was rejected. Jesus came to his hometown and to his own family, and they didn't want him. Could you imagine that? Could you imagine living away from your family and then going home for the holidays? And when you got there, they didn't pay any attention to you, and they let you know they didn't want you there. That's what Jesus experienced. They didn't believe him, and finally, they crucified him. So what are the implications of this concept that John gives us that Jesus is the light? How do we avoid the tragedy among those who Jesus first came to? What must we do to recognize and receive Jesus? What must we do? Well, first of all, you must have a desire to see Jesus. The main reason that the shepherds and the wise men saw Jesus first was because they were curious. They wanted to find out what it was, this thing that they saw, the star in the sky, or the angels telling us that a child was being born. They wanted to see him. They were curious. When Hollywood was filming the movie Leatherheads that had George Clooney and Renee Zellweger in it, one of the scenes was filmed downtown on a Wednesday night. A few people got to see that filming from only a short distance away. Others stood behind barricades with their necks stretched really high in order to see over the barricade, straining on their tiptoes a great distance away. Why would they go to such effort? Why would they do that? Because they had a desire to see someone famous. To see Jesus, you got to have that kind of desire. You got to want to see him. When God puts that conviction on your heart, you got to want to do it. You must have a desire to see Jesus. If you're going to experience Jesus and you're going to receive Jesus, you must open your eyes. Jesus is all around us. We just have to look for him. If you look outward, you'll see order in the universe. If there's order, there must be a mind. There must be a being behind it all. If you look upward, you see stars as numerous as the sands on the seashore. No astronomer can really be an atheist if he really takes time to pay attention. If you look inward, you'll see the power to think, to reason, to be able to know right from wrong. Immanuel Kant, the philosopher, he said, two things convinced me of the existence of God. The starry heavens above me and the moral law within me. When I look at what God created, I can't help but know that there is a designer. And when I see the moral law that's just imprinted on my heart, I know that there's someone who placed it there. The handprint of Jesus is all around us, but you must be patient to see Jesus. A first-time visitor to the Grand Canyon, he asked the park ranger, where was the best place to see it? And the ranger said, it doesn't matter where you sit. It's all grand, from any angle or any location. Just make sure you find one spot, sit your rear end down, and watch it from sun up to sundown. See it transform before your eyes. Watch the changing of the colors. See the birds flying below. Hear the wind whistling through the crevices. The only way to see the Grand Canyon is not to rush it. Most people go to the Grand Canyon and never get off the tour bus. The majority of the people that go to the Grand Canyon just look out the window. They never get off the tour bus. Others race from one viewing spot to another, take a couple of snapshots, and then go home and say they saw the Grand Canyon. Some people go to the Grand Canyon, and all they see is a big ditch. And still others fight the congestion and buy a souvenir. They look at the Grand Canyon, but they don't see it. And people are the same with Jesus. Some come to church once or twice a year. Others come once or twice a week. They go through the motions, they say they're Christians, they look at Jesus, but they don't see him. Or they read a verse of the Bible and say a quick prayer. They think that they're spiritual, they look for Jesus, but they don't see him. Others witness miracles, experience God's care and protection, but they pass it off as a coincidence. Jesus is right in front of them, but sometimes the hardest things to see are those things that are right in front of our eyes. To see Jesus requires slowing down, being still before him, listening for his voice, and watching for his movements. You've got to be patient to see Jesus. You must experience him. A scientist could provide you with a scientific equation of hot Krispy Kreme donuts. This is what makes them what they are. And you would say, no, 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 no. I want to experience this chemical equation. No explanation can do justice to freshly fried batter covered with sugar. You have to experience it. A picture of it or someone describing the taste is not sufficient. You want to taste it. You got to experience it. The same is true of seeing Jesus Christ. You have to experience it. To the two disciples who questioned where Jesus was living in John chapter 1 and verse 39, Jesus replied, "Come and see." "Where are you staying, Master?" "Come and see." To Nathanael, who questioned and said, "Is there anything good that can come out of Nazareth?" Referring to Jesus, Philip said in John 1:46, "Come and see." Come and see is an invitation to examine Jesus for ourselves. We may have heard about him from others, but we're invited to see for ourselves, to experience him firsthand. John chapter 1 and verse 49 lets us know that Nathanael came. Nathanael saw. And John 1:49 says, "And Nathanael answered and said to him, 'Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel.'" In order to see Jesus, you got to experience Jesus. Now, maybe someone famous will pass you by, but today may be the chance of a lifetime to see Jesus. You have the opportunity to not only have a brush with someone famous, but to recognize and receive him. Today, don't let him pass by.